Pretend Hot Rod Lincoln music. Pretend Hot Rod Lincoln music. Welcome to episode 2, everybody. That's how we do things here. Yeah. I don't have that fancy Von Hessler Doctor promo.
You're getting there.
Yeah, I couldn't pull it up on the machine here. But anyway, folks, welcome to our second episode of 5 to Go. It's unfiltered expert analysis in no particular order, okay? You've got three guys that have followed NASCAR for a long time in different respects, whether it's Media Garage or whatnot, and we're here to dive into the big issues of the sport. We usually pick 5 or so of them every week, go long form of them. We're not recapping the race for you. There's plenty of other great podcasts, including if you're listening through the PRN channel, the Fast Talk podcast of the O'Reilly Auto Parts Pit Reporters. Two great places to start where you could just get a digest of the NASCAR news and notes that are just for that week. But myself, Doug Turnbull, along with the Von Hessler Doctor, WSB Radio host Eric Von Hessler, and champion mechanic Dan Elliott are going to dive in on 5 topics long form, guys. And so we were just sitting here talking off the air, and it is no secret some undercurrents that are going on, not just our sport of NASCAR and racing, but in society. It's just things seem unsettled.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Now they seem just people not only are angsty and divided, but it just seems like anything could drop to the good or the bad at the last second. And of course, the latest of these things being, starting at the end of last week and into the weekend, some really tough stances, or I don't mean tough as good or bad, but just staunch stances on the Colin Kaepernick and then different people's NFL not standing up, kneeling, whatever, during the national anthem. And it was not a zero issue in NASCAR. There was nobody that was protesting the national anthem that we could tell, crew members, drivers, owners, whoever. And then owners got asked about it, and then immediately Richard Childress and Richard Petty get caught or release statements, whatever, on the record, making very firm statements saying, essentially, if you don't stand up for the flag, you're fired.
Right.
To all their employees.
Agreeing with the president's remarks from Thursday,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. Sparked, of course, as Donald Trump's remarks. I believe it was a Saturday press conference.
I thought it was Thursday. He was there for Luther Strange.
Okay, yes. Yeah. But end of last week conference, nonetheless, where he even went as far as to say anybody who doesn't do in the NFL is an SOB.
Right.
In so many words. So I wanted to bring this in, not so myself or Eric Von Hessler, who has spent already 2 hours today on his, and you should go to the Von Hessler Doctrine podcast and find that, talking about the issue, or Dan Elliott about what we feel is the proper decorum as humans we should do for the flag. But I want to talk about, where does this intersect with our sport, and should this, with the state of the economy and the state of things being so uncertain in NASCAR, intersect with our sport? I'll pivot to you first, Eric Von Hessler.
Well, I think all sports, you have to remember there's a governing body. And
yes,
the governing body does have the right to tell. Look, you have a right to your free speech, but you don't have a right to race in the Cup Series. You don't have a right to be in the NFL. And I think that any governing body has the ability, if they want to say, if you're going to be in our sport under this governing body, we're going to expect these things out of you. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say to players on their platform, I agree with what Jerry Jones said. Jerry Jones said, you are entertainers on a stage, and that stage belongs to me. So I can tell you how to act on that stage. And what people forget about free speech is that's about the government. The government doesn't have the right to tell you can't say something. But we're on radio. I'm governed by the FCC, which is a governmental body, actually. The FCC, I'm governed by advertisers. So I can't just, decide to say anything that I want to. But I don't have a right to work at WSB. They want me to work there, and I want to work there. So I don't think there's anything wrong with a governing body saying, if you do that on our platform, we're not going to employ you here. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think you're right. Richard Petty and Richard Childress were kind of put on the spot. There wasn't a problem in NASCAR, but that's the way the media is now. So they were going to be asked the questions.
Yeah, and for those who don't realize, Eric, you've been on the air while this was happening, okay?
Yeah.
But Dale Jr. sent out a tweet this morning that said, and I will read it, it was a quote from JFK, or at least I haven't looked up to see if this is a quote from JFK. I'm just going to assume that Dale Jr.
It's an internet quote from JFK.
It's an internet quote that Dale Jr. tweeted from JFK. I like what it says either way. It says, all Americans are granted rights to peaceful protests. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And I think that's something in all of our political dialogue and anything.
But
to
I think
remember.
That's on your own time. That's not necessarily that you're going. You have a right to free speech. You don't have a right to be at the cup to race in the cup. Series.
And so Eric, I really respect your opinion because we could talk about the Monster Energy can you're drinking there, and there's a way you would have a way that I haven't thought about that can. And so I love that you bring that analysis and of course your political state of mind. I want to bring in Dan Elliott here. Dan, by the way, is extremely analytical, and he and I tried to solve the world's problems in my car right here at the station today. But Dan, you've operated a racetrack, and you've been a mainstay, especially through the 1980s and early 90s in the NASCAR garage. Where do you think how much do you think the sport should toe into the political arena, and is it to the detriment of the sport if it does?
I think it's to the detriment of everything when you get into this, because it's one of those things where you've got to be willing to pay the cost of the decisions that you make. And if you're willing to make a stand or a statement about whatever sport, and I think sports should be left alone and just enjoy the sport. Let's leave politics out of the sport and enjoy the sport for just the purity of the sport itself. But if you're going to go in and make a statement, then you've got to be willing to suffer the consequences, whatever it is, because I may or may not be in another ball game based on the way the owners or the players have voiced their statement of what they're willing to do. Well, I agree that you can protest anything, but you've got to be willing to suffer whatever consequences go with it.
It certainly, and as a track operator, I'm sure you had to deal with how much were fans allowed to express themselves? And I don't mean just in a hot budget issue we're talking about. Someone could come to when you were operating Gresham Motorsports Park and say, well, hey, it's my freedom of speech to watch this race, oh, I don't know, topless, or to scream the F word out every time Russell Fleeman passed Dwayne Begay on the racetrack, all right? Which Dwayne Begay didn't race there a lot, so it didn't happen a lot. Just an example, okay? So where is, as far as fan behavior, because maybe that's what this could boil down to, or does to driver behavior, did you as a track operator have to step in and, quote-unquote, step on somebody's rights?
You know, it's something you do as a business owner or a owner of any type franchise or facility that you have to deal with. And let's just put a little bit of class with it. Obviously, you don't want to take your family somewhere where it's going to be either any of this stuff coming up. You don't want to, you're there to, like I said, to enjoy the sport. And let's enjoy the sport and leave this other for Facebook or wherever it needs to go. And we can certainly decide this. There's plenty of time to do that. Let's just enjoy and have a good time.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's almost like I love, you know, rock bands and stuff. I don't want to hear the opinion. If I'm going to a sporting event or I'm going to a rock show or I'm going to whatever, I'm choosing to kind of leave the real world behind for a couple hours. That's why I'm there, you know.
Yeah, that's why I don't take my radio with me and watch the news while I'm at the races, because
yeah.
I'm trying to escape this. And right now I'm caught back up in the middle of it. And I don't like it. Where am I going to go now to escape and just have a good time and enjoy my friends and company and family and just have a good time?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And so, one more thing on
course,
that,
yeah.
Because I know we're going to move on. NASCAR will be forced to deal with this more. If you noticed on the NFL, my recollection is, except for the opening day, unlike NASCAR, you didn't see the national anthem before every football game. But now they are taking the time to make sure that they show it, not out of patriotism, because it is a controversy. And so they'll take the time to point out who's kneeling and who's not. And that's going to affect NASCAR, because no matter what NASCAR does, the coverage, now the news departments at NBC, for instance, are going to be putting pressure on, hey, look, there's a cultural story going on here. See how your sport is responding to it, because they think that equals ratings. I think they're wrong, because I tune out when they start talking about this sort of stuff.
And the example that always comes up that you brought a bunch of times, Eric, when I've heard you talking on the air and when you and I have even talked offline about it, is what's happened with ESPN. ESPN decided, yeah. Hey, because let's face it, the other media are – an opinion-based, I mean, a lot of times our opinion-based, most of the show is analysts talking about political issues, and so why not? Why not go off topic and try that? And unfortunately for them, it's hurt what they are doing for, I think, that same reason.
Yeah,
they
want to escape. You don't get Pulitzers for just being a great sports writer who tells you who won and why and what happened during the game. The sports Pulitzers are given to reporters who address culture through the games, and reporters know that. That's what, you don't get awards from just being a great on track reporter. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, certainly. Any parting thoughts, Dan? Before I say that, by the way, I do want to point out NASCAR just in the last couple of years has had a conflicted relationship with politics, because I went to Daytona in 2016 expecting to see several cars with political campaigns plastered upon them. The Florida primary was coming up the 2 days afterwards, but Donald Trump was so far ahead, I think there was not much competition by that point. It was February. There was supposed to be a John Kasich-sponsored race car, and at the last second, JGL Racing in the Xfinity Series said, we're not doing it,
right,
for whatever reason. And then I asked Daytona President Joey Chitwood, I said, you know, Mitt Romney was the Grand Marshal here in 2012 before the race got rained out. Like, well, he was at the driver's meeting. What happened? There's no political. And he said, we're trying to keep this a release and stay away from it. The very next day after the Daytona 500, Brian France, David Reagan, Bill and Chase Elliott. Dan, I'm not talking bad about your Kim, but I'm just saying the contradiction, were endorsing Donald Trump.
But as individuals. They weren't. Even Brian France said he wasn't endorsing as NASCAR. He was endorsing as an individual.
Right, but it's hard to make the distinction between the rock star individual and the rock star when you're at a rally, and the only reason you're there is because you are the person that you are. You know, and at that point, Brian France, the only thing anybody knows about Brian France is that his grandfather founded NASCAR. That's the only thing they know. And so I think it puts you in a tough spot. As a traffic reporter on WSB, I have been instructed by management to just stay out of it. And that's why here I'm not going into the actual issue itself. I'm talking about how it intersects with NASCAR.
So you're saying they're censoring you?
No, I'm kidding. I'm not.
No, I'm kidding.
But I've gotten
would be
in trouble
ridiculous.
Before for weighing in on something I was passionate about and trying to weigh in a balanced manner, but all it did was inflame people, and then it attached me to an issue. I can't, and with the brand that I have is not a talk host.
Yeah.
Can't afford to do it. So it's a really conflicted issue there. And I want to pivot to you, Dan, one more time. Any parting thoughts kind of on just in general NASCAR in the political realm, Dan Elliott?
You know, any time that you make a statement, you know the affiliation. You're WSB, obviously. I'm part of the NASCAR family, whether I want to be or whether I'm not. It's still looked upon that way, just like when I turn on the computer this morning, there's a picture of Richard Petty. Well, Richard Petty has been out of racing since indirectly, he's still a major part of it, but still, he's not the part that I would go to for the current. I'd want to go to one of the Frances or one of the reigning champions or so forth, and he is a reigning car owner, obviously, so his input does matter. But you've got to understand, is just like other people have a right to protest and say what's on his mind, so does Richard. He has the right to do that. But that being said, you know, I was thinking about what we talked about earlier, and as a team owner, he can tell the people that they've got to stand for the national anthem, and I have to agree with that because my father fought in World War II, and that's the reason that I have the stand that I have. He fought for this country. He's proud of this country. So as Richard saying that, now if I'm on the team and I don't exactly support that, well, I have the right to go somewhere else.
And that is a fair point. So I just think that there's – to put a bow on it, I don't know that there's any winning this issue, right?
There's absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I don't know that this is not anything that's going to be settled in my lifetime and probably anybody else's. You do the best you can, but it is a tender subject, obviously. And we're going to have to tread carefully on what we say and do because the consequences are long term.
And to share a little bit of info there, thanks, Dan, for that. Brad, before Dale Jr. sent the tweet heard around the world right now, the biggest breaking news in all of breaking news history that Dale Jr. would say people have the right to peacefully protest. Jr. had kind of he spoke out against the showing of the Confederate flag at the racetrack, by the way. It's a complicated issue. Brad Keselowski said, when someone said, what do you think about this, the protesting during the anthem? He said, quote, on Twitter last night sometime, I can get behind trying to make the world a better place. I can't get behind putting down others. Kneeling clearly does both.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you ask for personal, that's my opinion as well.
Right.
And governing bodies, not really NASCAR. NASCAR's going to be pulled into this because everybody's going to be asked the question. I don't see anybody actually kneeling for the NASCAR. I mean, I would be very surprised if that happened in NASCAR. But you have to, with the NFL body, governing body, after a while with people, they're not going to separate the players from the league. And if it continues, after a while, it's going to seem like, well, that's the league where they don't stand for the national anthem, whether that's true or not, because probably most players are standing
no matter what. National anthem has stood for more than just what initially Colin Kaepernick kneeled for. Now it's, well, I'm just going to show solidarity with my teammates that are upset about it. It's become all these things. So you can't, if you're making a snap judgment about somebody that does it now, it's more complicated than it is because just like a lot of the famous movements right now, whether it was Tea Party a few years ago or Black Lives Matter, or what, they end up meaning a bunch of splintered different things, and you can't hang your hat on the whole.
Yeah,
well, one of those.
Well, it's hard. It's a nuanced issue, but then for most people, it's just, are they standing or are they not standing?
Yeah, and that's what it was on SportsCenter for the first 10 minutes this
from
morning,
From my point of view, the concept, I'm getting a little political here and then I'll cut away from it.
That's okay.
The whole concept, the idea that everyone who stands for the national anthem thinks the country's perfect is absurd. I think taxes are too high. I don't like the fact there's $20 trillion of debt. I stand. You stand and salute the flag and then you complain. That's the way that I see it.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. And you know, Dan, I know you're passionate about the sanctity of this country as well, and we all are, and how that manifests itself is different. And I think that's where the difference is, because I don't think that the people that are kneeling all hate America.
No.
It's a more nuance than that. I just wanted to share a couple of more pieces on this. Richard Petty, so we had Richard Childress and Richard Petty say, now this is Richard Childress and Richard Petty, and hear what I'm about to say next, say, if you don't stand up, you're fired. Here's what the actual head of Richard Petty Motorsports said, who is not Richard Petty.
Strangely enough.
Andrew Murstein, co-owner. He said, and Richard Petty is part owner, but these guys brought the bills, okay? NASCAR owners who spoke out today are all proud Americans who have lived through world wars and turbulent times. While I respect their thoughts, and personally, I think it's wrong to kneel, I wouldn't fire someone. It's the same organization. I wouldn't fire someone for expressing their feelings. I would sit down with them and say, it's the wrong thing to do, and many people, including myself, view it as an affront to our great country. If there is disenchantment toward the president or a few bad law enforcement officers, don't have a cross over to all that is good and right about our country. The flag is. He goes on to say what the flag means. I don't need to say all of that.
But these, can I say something? This is being forced by the media and where they come from. Most people in this country just think you should stand. It's really kind of a. So, you know, the Steeler that walked out of the locker room and stood, I can't remember his last name. The former Army Ranger. I guarantee you that his sales of his jersey. Not just from Pittsburgh. He is going to become everybody's favorite player.
I bet
after
Donald Trump wears his jersey at the next rally.
I mean, I'm just saying, that guy is going to become everybody's favorite player after their favorite team. And that's where the reality is, not with the pressure coming from the media. I don't want to get too political. I know we want to talk racing.
One more statement there, and I heard you about to chime in, Dan, and I'll let you chime in for the real last word of that before we go. NASCAR finally felt pressured to release a statement, and you know, I understand that. It's a billion-dollar industry. Sports are a unifying influence in our society, bringing people of differing backgrounds and beliefs together. Our respect for the national anthem has always been a hallmark of our pre-race events. Thanks to the sacrifices of many, we live in a country of unparalleled freedoms and countless liberties, including the right to peacefully express one's opinion. They sat on both sides of the pine there saying you have the right to do it. It's not
lawyers.
It's not respectful. So,
lawyers.
So there you go. So, Dan, one more thought on this before we move to something a little more micro in NASCAR.
Doug, it was kind of... cultural awakening for me, and it wasn't very much at the time, but I thought it was being a kid, was the first race we went to in Michigan. I think that was 1977.
And this is with the Elliott Family Racing Team.
Where they played two national anthems. They played the Canadian National Anthem and the American National Anthem. And it just brought chills to you to watch everybody stand for both anthems. And out of respect for each other, not anybody stayed seated for either anthem. And out of respect, I thought it was just great to come together as nations and being able to just enjoy a day, a sporting event, and forget about everything else and just come together.
And I think that's where politics and NASCAR do properly meet. I think about in all sports after 9/11. I mean, the whole country is holding hands. Yeah. We're going to be strong, and we should still see the flag as a symbol of that, regardless of how we choose to act during those times. So I totally agree, Dan. That's great perspective to bring. And I know, as having operated a racetrack and all that, I felt like the most important thing we executed on race night, because I sometimes had to press play on the CD player for you, was the national anthem. And there was a couple of times that I screwed it up. Okay. Not singing it, but executing behind the scenes or announcing it. So I think that's big. I want to pivot a little more micro, just into sort of the racing world right now. We've got
actual racing.
Yeah. So our break from politics is finally starting. All right, 20 minutes in. I want to talk about, we know that the Toyotas are dominant. We've heard many variants of a number of different things. And Dan, I'm calling an audible here because Eric brought this up. Dale Jr., who is just shaping the topography of this entire podcast, spoke at length in his daily Dale Jr. Download podcast, which is on the Dirty Mo Radio channel, you know, dirtymoradio.com and all the different places you can find that. But he spoke about, and then did again to the press later, about destroying tires after burnouts. And in doing so, you can upset the crush panels under the car, create some, you know, create it so you can't really inspect it to its full integrity. And so I'm actually going to pivot as a mechanic. I want to pivot to Dan Elliott first and say, Dan, I don't know if you heard about that or not, but I'm sure you've seen over the years where the burnouts have become more and more excessive. And it seems like drivers do things on purpose, possibly or allegedly, to make it so any advantages the mechanics find don't get found by NASCAR. What do you think about the assertion by Dale Jr. that NASCAR needs to do, fill in the blank about that?
Well, you know, I thought they'd already done it, because I can remember a race being held at Charlotte, which was that the first Winston, the second Winston that a driver won the race and blew the engine up?
Oh, it was the very first one, Darrell Waltrip. Darrell Waltrip's engine blew as soon as he crossed.
Yeah, front straight away. Obviously, there are things to be gained by doing this. As a car owner, I could not stand to watch this happen if there wasn't something involved in it. Not everybody, obviously, but NASCAR can obviously come in and say that you'll be docked points or fined or both if you continue to do this, because it does. It destroys the integrity of the race car. And with the bodies being down to a fraction of an inch difference between each other, then you've got to be able to go through the inspection process afterwards to make sure that everything was maintained during the course of the race.
Yeah, I think on one hand, if you look at it, I think that Dale was sticking up for his teammate Chase, who had gotten a penalty on an infraction.
I will say, when he first spoke out about it, it came out like last Monday or Tuesday. The penalty was Wednesday, so he actually was not even addressing the 2014.
Okay,
during
okay.
I listened to it.
I didn't see his thing. I caught the press conference part.
So I think
if they hadn't got caught, anything would have been said.
I don't. Well, you're saying that Dale said something about it before.
He did. Because he had just had Martin Truex Jr. on his podcast as a guest, like cold called him out of bed,
right?
Essentially, to have him on, and then later on was objective enough to say, "Hey, I love Martin, but burning the tires down." He goes, "I did that one time on purpose because I'd never done it before, and I saw someone else do it." He hasn't really won in the era that people started doing burnout.
Well, I mean, people have pointed out, I think I saw Jeff Burton point out, this, it's not a very good strategy, right? You have to win the race in order for that strategy to work. If you don't win the race, you're going to have to go through through tech. But I do remember, and also the burnouts, the fans love. So I don't think NASCAR is really going to get involved because they're having trouble with fans, and why would they remove a celebration thing that fans love, even though I agree that it does help the drivers and the crews with the integrity of the car and the post-race inspection. But I do remember that, back in not too long ago, drivers would get out of the car and they would jump on top of the car and start jumping up and down when they won. And NASCAR stopped that. I don't know if you remember, there was this ridiculous thing for a couple of weeks where they would put a piece of scaffolding up against the car so that when the driver got out,
I don't remember
he could.
This.
No, this happened in like 2000, I want to say three, four.
Oh, man, I got to go look that up.
But you remember when drivers used to jump up and down in the car?
Sure.
And they were saying that they were ruining post-tech inspections. And I remember a couple of races where they take this piece of scaffolding before the driver got out of the car, and so it made it impossible for the driver to actually jump up on top of the car. And that's a post-race celebration, and they did get rid of that for that reason. But the fans love the burnout. I don't know that NASCAR will remove it, even if it should be removed.
Well, and Dale Jr. made the point. You could do the burnout.
Just don't blow the tires.
Just don't sit there. And, I mean, there's got to be a point where if you're holding – I mean, the burnouts now are big. I saw Tyler Reddick's burnout. I was at Kentucky Speedway in the booth for PRN this weekend, and it was his first career win. And there's something I want to get to off of this later on in the podcast if we have time. But, I mean, that was a long burnout. And then after he got the flag, he just whipped it around and did another one again. Yeah. I mean, there was it was more excessive than before. So, I mean, so Dan, back to you. You said as a car owner, you don't want to see other teams doing that. But as a groundbreaking mechanic that you were, were there, I mean, without maybe kissing and telling too much, were there certain things that you guys would do back in the day, as maybe even involving a celebration that would help you stay legal afterwards or cover something up?
No, not really, because it came down to one thing for us. And during the time that we raced, Doug, we didn't have a lot of equipment. Eric, it came down to you didn't have very much stuff left at the shop. And the motor that you won the race with was the one that you went back and qualified with for the next event. So any damage you potentially did to it during your victory celebration could come back and bite you in the butt for the next qualifying run you were going to do, because we just didn't have enough equipment to be able to burn down a motor during your victory celebration and then come back for the next events and be able to be competitive, because you at that time were running absolutely your best stuff, and it wasn't a lot of stuff that was easily duplicated because you didn't have the technology or the sponsorship to be able to have this stuff readily on the shelf, just pull it off the shelf and create another winning motor. That technology was on the cutting edge at that time. And like Ernie said, each horsepower that you gained during the course of the year, if you gained 10 horsepower, that 10 horsepower over the course of the year might have cost you $1 million to gain.
Wow. And that was back then. That was back in the mid-80s.
That was then. That's not now. So I cringe every time I see those cars up against the chip doing the burnout. Yeah, I love to see the burnouts, but I'm like you. It comes to the point to where that when is it a burnout and when is it just abuse to the driveline and to the motor? And
they didn't always used to do burnouts even up until maybe 2001 or so. That really when the new crop that's now the older crop of drivers, Kevin Harvick's, Jimmy Johnson's, the Busch brothers, when they came into the sport, that became more regular. When Terry Labonte won the 2003 Southern 500, his final career win, the same year that Bill Elliott had his final career win, you know, there were two drivers on their way out. And I remember Terry taking, he may have taken a Polish victory lap.
Yeah.
And they asked him afterwards, and he goes, I don't know, these kids are burning out every single week. He goes, my career is enough just to win the race and drive to victory lane. And that's okay. Cultures have changed. Yeah. But it certainly tears up a lot of equipment.
I always have rock and roll analogies because it's the other thing that I love. But, you know, some bands for a while were, you know, tearing up their guitars. And, you know, and John Hiatt had a great song called Perfectly Good Guitar. Most musicians, old musicians, are like, why would you break a perfectly good guitar?
Absolutely.
We love guitars. And they cost a lot of money.
They do.
So I'm not going to go out and buy a new guitar before every show.
And if you were, couldn't you give that guitar to like a kid or like somebody that was starting out? You know, that would mean way more to that one person.
That sounds like a Labonte thing to me. It's like, we respect the equipment. Why would I do that?
Hey, Doug and Eric, I can remember when I first saw Jerry Lee Lewis, he came to Dawsonville and did a little concert.
I would have loved to have been at that.
Yeah.
Yep, and it was awesome to see. And after the concert was over, he just rolls the piano off of the stage in front of the crowd there, and I'm looking at one of the people there, and I said, what in the world is this? I said, that piano couldn't have been cheap. Well, they said it wasn't his piano.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It was in the rider.
Fire.
It was in the rider. You have to provide a piano that I can destroy.
That I can destroy. So it might not have been their guitars.
Yeah.
It definitely isn't the driver's race cars. So until somebody says something, it'll be as it is.
Well, they do ask on the radios sometimes, especially in the lower series, like, hey, can I burn this thing down? You know, can I blow it up? And actually, in the Xfinity and truck series, they do have a motor rule where you have to take a motor to three different races or, you know, before
they
you can do it.
But do you remember my stand at the racetrack on burnouts?
I do, but do explain.
Yes, it was, you can do a burnout just as long as you stay moving, because if you pull up against the wall and do a burnout, you forfeit your winnings because it melts the asphalt on the front straightaway.
I remember the driver you penalized for that too. It was Boo Carlisle, who raced in the lowest division we had on the track, finally won a race because I think he was one of only two cars in that race. And he, or something, it was something that you don't celebrate overly, but he finally won after running in the back and breaking in every single race. And so, Boo, God bless him. And he's a younger guy, and he was kind of a showman. He was more of a showman than a driver. And Boo Carlisle in the 00 with a little B in front of the 00. Boo. All right. He sat there and he just floored the thing. He didn't care. I think y'all had told him in the driver's meeting that day, this is the new rule. And he floored it, just held it against the wall. And y'all penalized him. And whatever little money he won, I don't think he took Max back with him.
He won one race and forfeited the money. Before we go, I was thinking about this. It's all around victory celebrations. I mean, I love eye candy as much as anybody. But can we get rid of the beauty queens? Because back in the old days, the good old boys would jump out of their cars and they would hug the beauty queens and everything. But these drivers today, number one, their girlfriends or wives are as good looking or better than the beauty queens.
And some of them, both their girlfriend and their wife.
Yes, exactly.
Better than
and secondly, they have so much money that they could lose in a divorce. It is uncomfortable for me to watch these drivers work hard not to make eye contact with these beauty queens so that they don't have to get in an argument. After this, the beauty queen, I was watching yesterday, and she's just standing there. No one is interacting with her, and it's just...
Well, no, because one of them has to stand by, just like the sprint girl, you know, used to do. Behind them and smile, but they're showing more than the sprint cup girl showed,
I know that, and I'm a man.
That's the thing that I have a problem with. It's like, come on.
Yeah, you know? I'm not opposed to anything that, you know, we know what's going on there, but there used to be, back when guys used to jump out of the car, those good old boys, they'd hug them, and you know, it was like, okay, there's something going on here, but it's just awkward.
Seems
because
antiquated.
I know the driver is thinking, if I make eye contact, this is going to turn into an argument. And so you had this weird moment where they're just not ever making eye contact with the beauty queen. It's an old school thing. It needs to be get rid of it.
Dan, you've been to Victory Lane a bunch of times in the Winston girl era where it was just, I'm not trying to say the wrong thing, but it's selling the same thing, but it's selling it in a different way. Like, did you have a problem then or now with the whole beauty girl thing in Victory Lane?
No, not really. And it's one of those things where, you know, you're there one Sunday and you may or may not get there for a lot of Sundays following that. So you just enjoy it while it's there. And obviously nothing's going on. So you just take it with a grain of salt and you're focused on what you're doing and trying to get back to Victory Lane, but it's not the girls you're in Victory Lane for. So, every sport has this, and every sport kind of gets through this one way or another. You got the cheerleaders, you got whatever. It's nice to have.
The football players are usually separate from the cheerleaders or the girls of the basketball game.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not bringing up a moral objection to it. I just think it's awkward.
It is awkward.
It's just awkward.
Because they're right next to each other. Like Samantha Bush and Braxton come squeeze into Victory Lane right there. And like the girls already standing next. We're not laying fault on her either. I totally get that. So I actually want to talk about Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. and the fast Toyotas. All right. By the way, they've had a lot of chances to do those burnouts. That's how we kind of got on this. But our third subject today, I want to address, it seems to me they've won rounds one and or the race one and race two of the playoffs. Round one and two, round one, they're already, you know, blanked into round two. They're done. And they are routinely the drivers. Kyle Busch led 187 laps in Sunday's race. Martin Truex Jr. led, I think it was 112, and Kyle Larson led one, and that was it. And those are the three guys, by the way, that continuously come up in the final four conversation. We're not supposed to call that the championship four conversation. So, Eric, I want to ask you first, out of these drivers, out of Truex and Kyle Busch, they're supposed to be satellite teams and sharing information. At what point during this playoff, recalling on your years of watching these championships in different formats, at what point does the playoff, does the notebook close between either Joe Gibbs Racing at Furniture Row or between the 78 and the 18?
When Kevin Harvick won, they were satellite to, who were they satellite to?
Oh, with Hendrick, yeah.
With Hendrick.
Through last season.
I don't know how that was handled. I'm used to satellite cars aren't going to be fighting for championships with you usually. Now it's a little bit of a different era, so I think they're kind of, they're going to have to make this up as they go along. I think at that, now I can only tell you what I think I would do if I was in that situation. I would get rid of the whole satellite thing and just, you're basically teammates. And so you should handle it the same way if Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson sure. are in the chase. Give them both the same stuff. I mean, information,
which Furniture Row is
data.
Paying for
right.
the same stuff.
Yeah, if they have
and
every
gives,
right.
is,
yeah.
It gives, I think the problem, maybe a little tension this year has been, they've had the same stuff, and Furniture Row, the 78 team, has whipped their butt.
Right.
And now they're a little more equal, but still, Truex, for those who don't recall from Sunday's race mm-hmm. or didn't see it, got caught up in Kevin Harvick's wreck coming to the green checkered flag at the end of stage number two. Was all the way back in the pack and drove up to fifth. At Chicago last week, he drove from 13th to yeah. first, pretty much under green flag. So Dan, in your experience, the Elliott family team was always a single-car race team, but you followed Team Motorsports. Did you ever have a satellite relationship with another team, and did it ever get testy, or were you completely independent? How did that all work a couple of generations ago now?
You know, it was never satellite. You had some owners along that owned several different teams, but it still came down to when it all sifted through, you had one or two drivers that were better than the others. And obviously, all the funds got kind of diverted to the better drivers. And
once it got
when you're
to
trying
the
to win
championship,
a championship, that's
yeah.
the way it's got to be. Today, I still have a hard time dealing with the fact that you've got so few owners that own so many cars. Down to it, you really don't have a choice in the matter of what goes on when you've got a team owner that's got three, four, or five teams, and he wants to do whatever he wants to do. You're pretty much, you play or go home.
Yeah, it hasn't hurt. I mean, I think for the most part, as a fan, if I watch Formula One, I can see and feel team orders all over the place. I don't feel that from NASCAR. Now, I don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes, but you still have two competing organizations here, right? One's a satellite team, but the guys at Furniture Row want to win this, and the guys at JGR want to win this. So it seems to me that it's still a pretty competitive thing. And I think Dan's right. At the end, when it comes down to it, These are the best drivers this year. I mean, Kyle Larson's in a Chevrolet, and Chevrolets have been having trouble, along with the Fords being up there in front and winning races. But for some reason, Kyle Larson, with whatever the package is, whatever the aero yeah. stuff is, these are the three drivers who have figured it out better than anyone else, right?
Well, I think so. I think that's and drivers and teams.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think
exactly.
that we need to put those together. And there's no doubt that the 18 has run better than the 11. Which has run better than the 20, which has run better than the 19, mm-hmm. and they're all Joe Gibbs Racing. So let's look at it like this. Last year, Kevin Harvick and Jimmy Johnson had an incident at Chicagoland. They were still satellite teammates, and Harvick went and confronted Johnson and the motor coach, and someone, they caught that on a security camera. That was last year. It was last year. And then Johnson later on in the season, as the season wound down, made a comment about, it doesn't really seem like, the Ford keeps beating our butts every week. That was a conversation that was being had from 2014, 15, and 16, mm-hmm. was why was the four of Harvick outrunning the mm-hmm. whole Hendrick Motorsports when they're sharing information? And really, this is just the next iteration of it. Now that Stuart Haas has moved to Ford, growing pains. Hendrick has less teams to share with, growing pains.
Yeah.
The 78 and the Joe Gibbs Racing team, or the Furniture Row and Joe Gibbs Racing, are a potent organization together, and they're in their second year of it, and they're hitting their stride.
What I can't figure out
yeah.
is why the Fords can't find. I mean, when you see someone like Kevin Harvick on one team, yeah, maybe there's growing pains there, but then someone like Brad Keselowski, they're there throughout the race. They look about mid race as if they might be able to do something, but time after time, by the end of the race, they're fifth or sixth or seventh.
One thing I've heard, I was talking to a couple of people in the garage this past weekend, is that there's a reason that the 2018 Toyota Camry racing body was on the track before the stock car, the actual product vehicle that customers could buy was.
Right.
There's a reason for that, and it's that the nose is so engineered that it adds a certain amount of downforce. And that's when Brad Keselowski made the tweet last week, and we talked about it here on the first episode of this Fi2Go podcast, which y'all should go listen to, by the way, to get some context. When Brad Keselowski tweeted that, I think there's been something that everybody knows in the garage is going on, and it may not even be cheating, just an actual advantage that is built into the cars that every Toyota has. Now, go ask. No, go get BK Racing or Premium Motorsports to explain it, but they have a lot of other stuff wrong, and that could be what the advantage is.
Right.
So any last thoughts on the 78 and the 18 or teammate sharing information, Dan Elliott?
Well, you know, it's to their benefit to do that to some point and then let the driver settle it when it comes down to the end of the race, because obviously it comes down to the end of the race. You've got to be there to scrap it out with whoever. If you got two drivers, you've got to put yourself in that position to be able to be there to compete for the win.
Yeah.
So hats off to all of these drivers that day in, day out, that seem to be the cream of the crop and get it done at not just a couple of events for the major part of the season. But you've got to remember one important thing: Chase is not, and the tide could turn any time on an advantage that
yes.
some team's going to come up with. And just like Hendrick, he's been the beneficiary of many of these years, because look at the championships, obviously, that they've carried home.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody's got the right to say anything about Toyota, because at some point in time, even Roush seemed to have an advantage years ago, and I don't know where that went.
Yeah, that's gone a long time.
Yeah, but still, the tide could turn any time, and you see a different group of drivers in victory lane.
Yeah, and also, I always think of Jimmy Johnson lurking. If the two front runners start messing around and get in trouble, you know, yep. Jimmy might jump up and steal another one, because I felt like I was surprised that he got the one last year.
Oh,
so,
yeah, and I think he seems even more distant this season. He finished 14th, I think it was,
Sunday.
Yeah,
they've got problems over there, definitely.
Yeah, it seems like, but 14th is all he's having. He's still comfortably in this thing. If they just kind of slowly build momentum and then round three turn it on and win two of those three races, don't count them out at home.
But don't you think that yesterday, if Truex hadn't gotten in trouble, he's still faster than the 18? Don't you think that he would have? That was his race to lose.
At one point,
I think
he took the
lead.
Nice
to have seen it settled out that
yeah,
way. Yes.
Yeah.
He took the lead by some pit strategy. He stayed out during a pit sequence.
Yeah, that didn't work out.
But it didn't, but he finished. But he went from like 13th to first, and then he finished fifth.
No, it worked out for points. It didn't work out for a win.
Yeah, and
because Doug and Eric, what races are coming up that do you see other drivers having an advantage on races that are coming up here? In
Talladega is a crapshoot. But guess who almost won Talladega in May? Kyle Busch. Ricky Stenhouse played him on that restart.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's it's.
It's funny because in the fantasy league, and I used Martin Truex for my last time that I can last week. And every week I look at the track, and every time I think, no, this is a Truex track. It doesn't matter what kind of track it is. Right now, I'm thinking it's a Truex track.
The drivers that are the best are the ones I usually pick the least in NASCAR fantasy, because they never stand out to me as, oh, this is their track, because it's like Jimmy Johnson. It's like, he could win anywhere.
Yeah.
And Truex, I literally went into Sunday with, out of the nine times you could pick someone, I'd only picked him twice this year.
Oh, wow, you got a good stretch.
I do, but how idiotic. That's why I'm so far behind.
I don't know. I'm
going to
play
so
it differently
much.
If I do it next year. I'm going to save all the really, really great guys till the end.
Yeah, well, that's what I've tried to do, but in the middle section, that's tough. Okay, so two more subjects here. By the way, if you're tuning back in, listen, this is the 5-2-Go Racing Podcast. WSB radio host Eric Von Hessler is on. Champion mechanic and track operator Dan Elliott from the Elliott Racing Gang out of Dawsonville. Dawsonville Dano's on with us. And I want to ask you all, because, Dan, this relates to your nephew, Chase Elliott. All right? I was bewildered and befuddled and taken aback by the news three weeks ago, that he was going to be in the 9 car next year with his same team, and that Hendrick was going to table the 5 and have William Byron drive the 24. And that alone was enough to just make me feel, this is the weirdest year ever. I just feel like it's just something weird about it. But I wanted to make it be about something bigger. And that's that we used to see, like, say, the number 10 of Ricky Rudd. That was always the tide for it. Every race, it was cheaper back then. there was a lot of value. The sport was rising. Tide laid down the money. The DuPont 24, rarely did they have a different sponsor. The GM Goodrich number 3. Oh, I don't know, the Coors number 9 Ford, right? Those always had just about the same sponsor. And now you have drivers changing teams all the time. The team will just decide to change the numbers. So, Dan, I want to ask you, does it sit with you the same way it's sitting with me? This so much change going on that even Chase Elliott, 2 years into replacing Jeff Gordon in the 24, is like, I want to be the 9. I want to be my dad's number. How does that sit with you?
I think it's I'm surprised it wasn't the number 9 to begin with. I'm really surprised they didn't do that. But you got to look at it maybe from two advantages here. One or two things that pop into my mind is, are they trying to bring the magic back? Is it about the numbers that they may be able to see victory lane, or is this about another diecast and another way to sell something at Walmart? I don't know. But, you know, you've got to look at it and wonder why a lot of things do happen. But, you know, if you could get to the right person, I'm sure you'd get an answer right quick on what the truth really was.
And I'm wondering, too, because they re-signed Chase this year. This is the year that his contract ran out. Chase ran the number 9 all the way through late models, K&M Pro Series. He ran the 94 for a few truck races and the 25 for a few cup races. All of his Xfinity races were in the 9, and then it's been all cup races in the 24 since then. And so I've got to wonder, you know, Eric, if maybe this was something that he negotiated because he's not getting the salary that a normal Cup driver would because the sport is changing. So maybe he and his management team said, okay, if you're not going to – this is just a theory. Yeah. I have no inside knowledge here. I'm wondering if maybe he negotiated that because he couldn't get $10 million
next year.
Well,
it wouldn't surprise me. You know, athletes of all kinds get attached to numbers. You know, a college player that's a big college player will come onto an NFL team and they pay him something to get the number from somebody else. Because So athletes of all stripes get attached to numbers and they want to be with the numbers. I understand putting Chase in the 9. It makes a lot of sense as far as bridging two generations. Or, you know, I get all that. He seems like he belongs to the number 9. There's no problem with that. And then you can't retire the 24 because of the legacy that number has. And Hendrick, it's kind of sad because Hendrick started with the number 5.
Yeah, and your boy, Jeff Bodine.
Jeff Bodine, who, you know, was I named a hamster Jeff B when I was in third grade. And this was because I was seeing Jeff Bodine race the 99 modified at, you know, Spencer Speedway in Rochester, New York. So before he even got to Cup or did anything. So it's sad for me to see that. I know that it's been a bit of a cursed number, strangely enough, for being the oldest number.
I was probably a Jeff Bodine fan until I saw him come into Pocono that time with Tanya Tucker, and he had his leather pants on his top. That kind of did it for me.
Jeff was, as a kid, he had the coolest looking car. It was number 99, and it was green and white and gold. And, you know, when you're a kid, and he won all the time. But I think now he's a really cool guy if you talk to him. But he was seen at the short tracks as being, you know, rather arrogant. He was one of the first guys who had a T-shirt truck back in like 1971 or 72.
That's big, yeah.
But, you know, these were great races I saw when I was a kid. Richie Evans and Maynard Troyer and Jeff Bodine. So it was great racing. And then he went into the 5. He won the Daytona 500. And, you know, so it's for me, it is, Jeff Bodine aside, just to lose that number for Hendrick when it's the founding number is, I think, a little odd for me. But I understand why you would put Chase in the number 9. And that number 5 has been a little bit cursed. It's been the car that kind of won't do what the rest of the cars that Hendrick would do for a long time. Kyle got a couple of wins out of it.
Yeah.
But
Is it in the number or is it in the driver?
It's in the driver.
Yeah, and it should be in the driver. I mean, this one thing is this sport has become such a team sport is the drivers have less personality because of the refinement and the money. We need some drivers for it to be about the driver. And if the number 9 makes Chase Elliott's team more about Chase and less about, good race car, that's going to be something valuable to it. He seems to me to be the heir apparent as far as winning the most popular driver title to Dale Jr.
Sure.
But there is no way that Chase alone is the heir apparent to the rock star status that Dale Jr. has. And part of that is just he's a low-key dude. Mm. There was something, Dan, about your brother. Bill was the same way, but there was something about him that I think because of how you guys started coming out of the hills, out of nowhere to one, Chase doesn't have that advantage, so to speak, because of the advantage he
Everybody
had.
Everybody saw him coming.
Everybody saw him coming. I think that's less charming. So it'll be interesting to see. This is the second week in a row that my alarm to wake up.
Yeah, well, at least we know. At least we know you're not going to oversleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would be bad if I overslept from this seat for sure. That's funny. So, but anyway, I think it's an interesting thing to unpack. So this leads to last question then, our fifth topic of the day here on Five to Go. If you two, Dan Elliott and Eric Von Hessler, and Eric, I'll start with you, were bajillionaires, it didn't depend on sponsorship. That was all. You were Furniture Row Racing. You were back in your own team, and you had to start a 2-car race team for the future. You're planning on being in the sport for the long haul. Who are the two drivers, Eric Von Hessler? And if you need a moment to think about it,
I can take anybody that's in the field now. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Anybody that's a regular Cup driver now.
I would say anybody that you think is Cup ready. Okay, you're going to start it next year.
If I'm going to start next year, I'm going to keep it because I would throw my buddy Andy Lally in because I think he deserves a Cup ride. But I threw him in there last week, and I don't want to become like a homer with him. I would
do it.
If you look at the whole Cup thing now, if I was starting two cars, I would take Matt Kenseth as the veteran, put him in one car, and I would put Kyle Larson in the other car. And I think if I gave him the right equipment, I think I'd do pretty good. We're waiting for Doug to get back to his. He thought I was going to vamp longer.
The live stream went off the air. I'm not sure or not. I can't tell. Yeah. But Dan, no, it didn't. Okay, we're back. Okay,
there was an
icon that popped up on this iPad over here. So
my thinking there is that Kenseth, I cannot believe that this guy doesn't have a ride. I get a veteran, I get a past champion, and then I get someone like Kyle Larson. And I get youth and, maybe the future.
All
the
hope in the world, yeah. Okay, so Dan Elliott, Eric's gone. Matt Kenseth and Kyle Larson, you can pick the same two if you want. We're not doing like a fantasy draft.
Well, he better pick Chase or else he's going to be in trouble, I would think.
He's been in trouble.
So I've got a bajillion dollars and I can pick two drivers,
yes.
Correct? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take my bajillion dollars and I'm either going to take my wife or the Sprint girls and we're going to go out of this country. Find an island to buy, and you won't see me anymore.
Oh, yeah, and this brings that old adage, right? How do you make a small fortune in racing?
Start with a large.
Start with a large one.
You know, I'm sure this is a buddy of mine used to drive. Used to say, and I used to say, man, I have this weak stomach, so I can't even be an amateur driver. You know, I get out of the car and for 4 hours, I'm discombobulated. But in my mind, you know, I'd love to do that on an amateur level or something. And my buddy who drives at the amateur level said, well, if you want to get the experience of being a race driver, just pick the hottest day of the year, go up in your attic, put on all your winter clothing and a big winter coat and sit there and tear up money for 2 hours.
Oh, God. Listen, the struggle is real. So before I tell you my two drivers, I spent some time in the garage for the Xfinity Series. I had a long conversation with Harrison Rhodes, just off the just chatting about his plight in racing, with David Starr, who's on the other end. Rhodes is a youngster. He's in his 20s. David Starr is in his 40s, maybe even close to 50 now, both driving for Xfinity teams where they can't even afford to buy enough sets of tires to race the whole race. And they were actually in a predicament this weekend because the Cup Series wasn't there for them to buy scuffs from. Mm. So there were less tires available for them to buy for bigger teams to have at a reduced rate to run the race. And it just, you know, the reason I'm saying that is it just made me think about the future of the sport and wishing that they had a chance somehow. And I guess, you know, for the libertarian side of me wants to say, well, it's capitalism.
Lays off air.
But then also they say, well, there's a $1 billion governing organization, NASCAR. You would think that there'd be some way to subsidize tires, just so they had the tires for Pete's sake. And then they talked about the complexities in marketing themselves when they don't have any guaranteed TV time because they're running 25th in the Xfinity Series because they have no motor. And they're just as capable drivers, more than likely, just like you talk about with Andy Lally, than say whoever. Maybe say Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney, very talented driver.
Sure.
Had some help. You know, his dad got him there. And I just bring that point to say there's so many interesting stories on the other side of the garage. And I don't have any way to judge the talent. When you're talking about burning the money in the attic, I don't have any way to judge the talent of even like my friend Chris Cockrum when he runs two races a year.
Yeah, it's hard to.
Just can't do it.
Can I just jump in? And I know you're doing your thing, but I mentioned this last week. You know, I want to see older drivers. I want to see somebody 45 years old along with the 19-year-olds, and I really think it's – I don't know what you do about it, but I think it's hurting the sport. Also, cut 10 races, you cut the tire budget.
You cut the tire budget,
yeah. Big time.
Yeah. You know, David Starr told me, he said, literally, he's like, it's $3,500 for a set of tires, and if I have that set of tires, I have a good enough car to run 18th. If I don't have them, I run 25th. That $3,500 is not worth it. There's no difference to a fan between 18th and 25th. It's slightly better, and that's that they just don't even have a chance. It's a really tough predicament it's in, and that's a problem that's always, as you know, Dan, always existed in racing, and we saw it all the way at the short track level.
Yeah, what did we talk about last week? About the owners are not going to pay the veteran drivers the money. They're going to get the younger drivers that can bring a sponsor. And if you're not fortunate enough to bring a sponsor, there's a lot of talented drivers. Very talented drivers that'll never have an opportunity to showcase any of the talent that they've got.
Exactly. And so when I was, actually what you were just saying about bringing the older drivers, Eric, made me reconsider what I was doing. So I think the driver right now that you could pick that's the biggest mix of veteran and youth that could be here 15 something more years but has already done something is Joey Logano.
Mm-hmm.
He always gets forgotten because he's been around so long. He's already part of the present, not the future. He's not thought of as the future. And I kind of feel the same way actually about his teammate Brad Keselowski. Keselowski's like 32, 33. Mm-hmm. You know, he's young.
See, Dougie, I was thinking about Dave Marcus. When's the last time you saw a driver drive with wingtips?
Yeah.
Ain't that the truth?
Because you lose. Listen, when a person gets into their mid-40s, their personality begins to flourish. You lose fear of things. You're going to go ahead and say what you think. And I think that all this stuff about age and everything we talk about, it is a problem in NASCAR that we need more personalities. I don't have any problem with guys who are 20 years old and somehow they've just got their stuff together and they understand everything and they're low key. But we need guys who get out of the car and start raising hell because that was part of the sport for so long.
And you're talking about John Force now.
We were talking about this last week. We need those kind of – and I think I brought up Ricky Rudd last week. He wasn't a total – but he was a guy – he looked dirty when he got out of the car. Yeah. These guys look like male models now when they get out of the car.
Well, that being said, I was going to start with Joey Logano, but let's take a mixture of old and young. I'm going to go Kevin Harvick.
Yeah.
Because of the varied experiences he's had as an owner, he's got all these other ventures outside of racing, and I think now, as he's looking at a sport where now Dale Jr. is stepping out of the way, I think Harvick sees his opportunity for two or three years to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picking him over Truex because of his winning pedigree for years and years. Even when he was at Childress, he managed to squeeze out a few wins a year.
Oh, I believe Harvick has another championship in the future.
Me too. And then instead of going Kyle Busch, who I think is the one that's at the tip top of his game and will be here another 10 plus years, I don't like the dude's attitude. If I'm an owner, I just don't like that attitude.
You're going to have to deal with it.
You're going to have to deal with it. There's too much to deal with there. So I'm going to step down and say out of the younger batch of drivers, Kyle Busch, by the way, is only 32 years old. Yeah. It's unbelievable. He's been around since 05.
Remember they had to raise the age. He was going to come in when he was 16.
When he was 16.
And they raised the age to 18.
Exactly. So I would also go Larson just because I think he's shown the most potential out of that same group that includes Ryan Blaney, Chase Elliott, Austin and Ty Dillon, Chris Buescher. Those guys always get forgotten. Chris Buescher's a freaking good driver.
Whole lot of talent.
So there's a lot of people to choose from there. And the thing is, the difference between first and 30th is, as far as drivers go, is minimal. And then that difference only compounds itself when you get in bad situations and bad equipment. Dan, I was looking at the field this weekend. So they had the huge NASCAR like Southern Late Model Tour Series race. I don't know the exact name of it, but it was at Martinsville Speedway under the lights Saturday night, Dan. And from first, there was like 60 cars or something tried to qualify. From first to 30th, there was less than a half second. Mm.
I can remember going to some of those races back when Cup ran, and it was a tenth of a second between the first car and the last car.
That's unbelievable.
And you talk about competitive feels. Now, that's how much has changed over the years. And Doug, at the number of cars
yeah.
for an event at Gresham, when you had probably 10 to 15 late models for an event, where when I was a kid, you'd go and there were lots of good cars that were turned away that did not make the feat.
Yeah, now you have way junkier cars that were missing the races in 2007 starting 35th. Because you just don't have the money's not there. The sport is obviously going through some kind of adjustment and contraction. That's why I just think, is to go back to our first topic, we need to be careful as a sport what we really kind of nose into there.
Can I ask? I know yep. we're ending now, but this is something that was on my mind from last week. We talk about drivers and personalities. Whatever happened to Greg Biffle?
Right.
I know he retired, I guess, but he sort of did.
Like he definitely. Yeah.
Is this his decision to be this far away from the sport, or? God, that guy was a good driver. And Roush was going downhill while he was there. He just disappeared.
There was hardly any sponsorship on the 16.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it was a mutual decision, but I don't think Greg Biffle wanted to show to the racetrack 40 weeks a year and run.
Right, I get that, but I mean, he didn't go into the
38
booth.
Weeks.
He's an articulate guy. He didn't go in the booth. He didn't. Yeah, he just disappeared.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Any insight to that, Dano?
No, but you've got lots of drivers that have done that also, and you just go back and look at your list from less than a decade ago and run down the list, and it's the same thing. And it comes down to what I heard as a crewman back when we were at the top of our game. When you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, you're not.
Yep.
Yeah, and that was certainly the case with Greg Biffle there.
My pappy
sure.
said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
All right, guys, let's call a wrap here, throw out a checkered flag for our second episode of Five to Go. I did manage to get Hot Rod Lincoln playing.
Sooner or later.
Yep, God bless you, Captain Herb.
That's it. So we remember our buddy Captain Herb, who set the blaze, at least on the WSB channel, as far as having a NASCAR show there. But Eric Von Hessler, catch his Von Hessler Doctrine every day on WSB Radio and our app and our website from 11 to noon. And then, of course, your podcast hour, just like this in this very room.
The 12:07 to 1.
12:07 to 1, oh something.
If you have the WSB Radio app, you can find everything. The Von Hessler Doctrine.
That's for sure.
Hey, Doug.
Yes,
Doug,
sir.
One parting question. What would Captain Herb say about yesterday's race?
What would he say? Yeah, said, oh, Lord, the Toyotas. That's what he would say. Dano, thanks for coming in, and thanks for remembering him. And, folks, we will see you next week at this time, or in a week if you're just listening in the middle of the week, here to the 5 to Go podcast. I'm Doug Turnbull, Eric Von Hessler, Dan Elliott. Peace out.